it's hard for us to wrap our brains around how many people, in fact, die of heart disease. You know, if we talked about 1,000 a week, that would be 52,000 people in a year. But if we talk about 10,000 people a week, then we're really looking at the accurate numbers. It isn't that way all over the world. When we look at heart disease rates in other countries, we find those numbers are much smaller. If I look at America's statistics, a little over 40% of Americans die of heart disease. You know, you take away accidents, all the different kinds of accidents that can happen, there's no question heart disease beats out every other cause of death by more than double. But in Italy, it's half that, about 21%. In Japan, it's 7% of deaths are from cardiovascular disease. So something's going on, and something's going on with the American way of life, and something's going on with the American diet. And so we can look at some of the easy things, but let's also look at some of the things that aren't as common and the things that specifically have to do with nutrition. You know, here on No Nonsense Nutrition, I always let you know that the opinions I give are mine alone and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the employee, the volunteers, the programmers, or the board of directors here at WSLR. They're strictly mine, Eve Prangluz. And so when I look at the opportunity that I have, that opportunity really does come from, Natural Awakenings and other really hip organizations here in Sarasota that help to underwrite some of these shows. So we thank Natural Awakenings since 1996, bringing you information about health, nutrition, the environment, children's issues, relationships, ecology, and worldview. And so you can pick up a Natural Awakenings and read my columns in it. I got a pretty cool column coming out this month. They gave me 3 pages. I'm very happy. It's on slowing aging. It's going to be the biggest issue they ever put out. And so make sure you pick one up. It should be hitting the stands today. So we're back to heart disease. If I walk up to everybody on the street and I say, what do you know that causes heart disease? They're going to say, oh, well, it's high cholesterol. Well, if you're a regular listener to No Nonsense Nutrition, you know cholesterol has way less to do with heart disease than the American pharmaceutical industry would like us to believe. Yes, there's a relationship, but the relationship is pretty small as compared to inflammation. Well, why are we the inflammation nation? Why do we have so blinkin' much inflammation here? Well, part of it has to do with the fats that we choose in our diet. When we look at fats, they fall into 3 fundamental categories, polyunsaturated fats, monounsaturated fats, and saturated fats. We won't do a lot of chemistry for you, but suffice it to say that saturated fats are things that we don't have a really lot of ways that our body can change this molecule. I often liken it to an octopus that went over to St. Armand's Key shopping with an open credit card and ended up with a bag in each arm. So it's an 8-armed octopus, and it's got a bag from every shop that it went to visit. It's a saturated octopus. It can't grab on to anything else because every arm is full. That's the way a saturated fat looks. When I talk about a monounsaturated fat like olive oil or avocado oil, I'm talking about an octopus that's got 2 arms open. Now, I know the word mono means one, but a monounsaturated fat, actually the octopus has 2 arms open. 6 arms are full of packages from St. Armand's. And those 2 arms then give it the opportunity to bond with something else in the body and create a new compound. A polyunsaturated fat, on the other hand, the octopus must have had a really low credit card limit because only 4 of the arms are occupied. And you would think that that's a really good thing, but in fact, too much polyunsaturated fat is troublesome because now it's got so many arms open, it can turn into a shoplifter. It can grab a hold of most anything. I say it's an octopus that's looking to get married. It's trying to bond with too many things, and so sometimes it makes bad decisions. a little cutesy way for us to begin to identify with saturated fats, because one of the most important studies that I think that was released in the last couple of years came from the Nurses' Health Study. You know, this study has been going on now, going into its second, well into its second decade, and they've got over 93,000 people in this study, so it really is a huge study. In fact, I have a client who's one of the members of the Great Nurses Study, and what they found out is that if people increase their saturated fat by even 5%, now 5% doesn't seem like very much. And when you talk about saturated fat, the first thing we have to do is to identify the fact that saturated fat fundamentally comes to us from meat. When we eat flesh food and when we eat dairy products, that's the place that we have the opportunity to get a hold of a good bit of saturated fat. And so it becomes a really easy exercise to see that when you increase the amount of meat that you eat, you automatically increase the amount of saturated fat that you're exposed to. Well, if you increase your saturated fat by 5%, doesn't seem like much, you can increase your risk of cardiovascular disease by 17%. You know, that's a small amount for a big increase in risk. But further, if you increase your saturated fat another 5%, meaning 10% more than the average bear gets, then you increase your risk of cardiovascular disease 17% again. So it goes up 34%. When we look at the total amount of fat in the diet, what we want to do is to try to get less total volume of flesh food. Specifically, the animals that have four legs. They're the places we get the greatest amount of saturated fat. If I eat a 3.5 ounce serving of white meat chicken breast, I get 1 gram of saturated fat. If I eat a 3.5 ounce serving of, well, prime rib as an example, I get 12 grams of saturated fat. The same size piece of meat has 12 times the amount of sat fat. I think that that's a remarkable look at how our choices can change our health. You know, oftentimes we recommend the use here on No Nonsense Nutrition, we being my multiple personalities, to use legumes and to use tofu, to use meat substitutes, to have more meatless meals. You know, back in World War II, they created a U.S. trend called Meatless Mondays to help to deal with the rationing situation. And, you know, Meatless Monday really is a good idea. I'm not trying to turn you into vegetarian, but what about being a part-time vegetarian? What about just having one day a week that you don't have any meat? When you do so, you automatically reduce your risk of saturated fat. That is, as long as you didn't saute the onions in butter in order to make your lentil soup or your chili. So, you know, I had a client that came in last week and she said, "Oh, I took your advice. I'm eating more beans. I, you know, put a pound of ground steak into the pan." And I said, "Well, what kind of steak was it?" And she said, "Well, I had a strip steak, and so I used that." Well, that's one of the ones that 3.5 ounces is 12 grams of saturated fat. So here she did something really good by eating some more beans and then did something really not so good by taking strip steak and grinding it up and putting it in the chili. Actually, the first time I've heard that. Most people are going to use ground round or ground loin. And remember your no-nonsense nutrition guidance, and that is anytime you're going to eat a four-legged animal, make sure it's the cut that you eat has the word loin or round in the name. Eye round, top round, bottom round, sirloin, tenderloin. Those are the things that have the lowest amount of total saturated fat. Well, what happened when they looked at heart-healthy eating? Clearly, we saw a relationship to something that's been remotely called the Mediterranean diet. You know, the Mediterranean diet was defined not as a particular program, but because of the fact that when they looked at the Mediterranean countries and all of the ones that border on the Mediterranean, so that's going to be everything from, you know, Egypt to Italy to Greece. What they found out was that those individuals had way lower rates of heart disease than the rest of the world. And so as that got defined as a diet that had a limited amount of red meat, lamb, beef, and pork in it, just a, you know, one or two servings of that red meat a week. There was more fish and poultry in that diet. The dairy products were low fat or no fat. There was more use of olive oil and nuts and seeds and less use of butter and cream. And there was a lot more whole grains, fruits, vegetables, beans, and peas. Well, you might say, Eve, I've been listening to No Nonsense Nutrition, and that's the diet that you recommend to help people reduce cancer. Right. That's exactly true. And in fact, the same diet that reduces your risk of cancer also reduces your risk of Alzheimer's disease, also reduces your risk of arthritis, also reduces your risk of... Do you hear that a healthy diet is a healthy diet? But the thing about the Mediterranean diet that really made impact is the fact that when they took individuals who had a heart attack and they put them on the Mediterranean diet, they had a 50 to 70% less likely chance to have a second heart attack. Plus, they improved their survival over the typical low-fat diet that is given to people after they've had a heart attack. My mother had repetitive heart attacks. And when she had her second heart attack, she was put on this low-fat diet, which kind of meant that she ate zucchini and hay. And she was just absolutely miserable on this low-fat diet, and it didn't have anything to do with improving her overall survival. Well, turns out the Mediterranean diet definitely does. So when we're looking for plenty of fruit, and citrus fruit included in that list, because boy, this is the citrus fruit season. I made a citrus salad yesterday morning for breakfast. I have a red grapefruit in my yard, and the neighbor has a pink grapefruit, and I've got a mini olatangelo, and I got a box of clementines, and I had those four different species all in one bowl. Oh my heavens, that was as good a nirvana as you can get in the wintertime in Florida, is a bowl of citrus salad to start your Sunday. So when you're having that fruit, at least two servings, when you're having tons of vegetables, I always shoot for a quart. When you're having more whole grain, I got a loaf of that really good whole grain bread from a local bakery, and it meets the criteria that my mother gave, which is that bread should hold a door open in a storm because it's so heavy. And then you start limiting the total amount of red meat and eat more low-fat and no-fat dairy products and a little less butter and cream. Well, you're on your way to the very diet that improves survival for individuals even who've already had a heart attack. But, you know, let's look at these heart-smart nutrients and the heart-smart foods that go with them and see if we can increase them, because we know that homocysteine is one of the enemies of the heart. You know, we've done a show before strictly talking about inflammatory compounds like homocysteine, but we want to understand that it is a byproduct of an amino acid, methionine, that, well, it's predominant in animal protein, but all of us need methionine. And so when we can't metabolize it well, we create this byproduct called homocysteine, which can damage the artery walls, and that in turn allows cholesterol to build up. Remember, cholesterol is not the issue. It's the pipes. It's not what flows through the pipes. But if you damage the wall of the pipes, meaning the wall of the artery, then cholesterol lays down. So when we look at the fact that 50% of all people who have a heart attack have cholesterols under 200, we find out that that same population of people who have low cholesterol usually have high homocysteine levels. And there are three B vitamins that can lower elevated homocysteine levels: folate, B6, and B12. You know, that's cheap and easy for you to take as a supplement. But what's true is you can get folic acid from any green leafy vegetable. Spinach is a great choice, but collard greens and mustard greens and turnip greens and dandelion greens and all those have adequate amounts of folic acid. Oranges have folic acid. Broccoli does. Lentils. Chickpeas. Fortified cereals. All of those things are going to contain folic acid. And so I happen to be a big fan of folic acid. I will recommend in my practice anywhere from 800 micrograms a day, MCGs, not MGs, 800 micrograms, all the way up to 2,000 for some individuals to get that homocysteine down. B6, the next critical ingredient to lower elevated homocysteine and reduce your risk of heart attack and heart disease. And by the way, homocysteine is the greatest relationship that we have to Alzheimer's disease. So whether you have a baked potato with the skin, or you eat a banana, or you have brown rice or peanuts or walnuts or soybeans or chicken or fish, all of those things, you're going to have B6. Actually, B6 is pretty endemic. It's in virtually every food in small amounts. But, you know, that handful of peanuts, you're going to get two bangs for your buck out of that, because not only are you going to get the B6, but you're going to be getting the kinds of unsaturated fats that reduce risks of cardiovascular disease. It was interesting in the Seventh-day Adventist study. You know, this was a study that had over 31,000 people in it. And I love these studies that have tens of thousands of individuals, because their data really holds. And when they looked at this population of Seventh-day Adventists out in Loma Linda, California, they found out that people that ate nuts five times a week had half the chance of heart attack and coronary death. Five servings of nuts a week cut the rate of heart attack in half. And the most commonly eaten nut in that collection was peanuts, but you know, because you were a regular listener to No Nonsense Nutrition, that peanuts aren't really a nut, they're a bean. They're a leguminaceae, but it still counted. The next most common was walnuts, and followed by almonds. And walnuts actually have the lowest saturated fat of all the nuts. They have less than 7% saturated fat, where things like soy nuts, you know, they become kind of popular at the health food store. They may have up to 16% fat. So not all nuts are created alike. But what was interesting is if you replaced 5% of the total daily calories from saturated fat with unsaturated fat by having more nuts and using nut oils like almond oil and walnut oil, you would actually reduce your risk as much as 42%. So you get B6 out of the peanuts, and you also get these wonderful unsaturated fats that reduce the risk of coronary disease. Remember, when we're eating nuts, they're still high in calories, good calories, but still high in calories. They have wonderful fiber, and they have these wonderful trace elements in them, because with the exception of peanuts, all of your tree nuts are high in a trace mineral. You know, when you think about the root structure on a nut tree, if I've got a 15-foot tall pecan tree, it's got a 15-foot deep root system, so it's pulling minerals from deep in the soil. And so we'll find that almonds are high in cobalt and Brazil nuts are high in selenium. You know, each of them contains particularly unique nutrients. Walnuts' unique nutrient is the high amount of omega-3 fatty acids that you've heard about come from fishes. And they also come from flax seeds. But walnuts are a really good source of omega-3 fatty acids, which are anti-inflammatory to the body. So back to lowering homocysteine, getting in folic acid, getting in B6, and then also getting in B12. You know, if you're a vegetarian, please, please, please take a vitamin B12 supplement. I have never, ever seen a vegetarian that we've run blood work on who has adequate amounts of B12. And again, low amounts of B12 are not just related to high homocysteine, they're related to high amounts of dementia. So, yeah, we're going to find them in potatoes and bananas. And, yes, we're going to find them in little bits in all sorts of foods. But B12, I got news for you. You want to do it with a supplement. That's the easiest way to do it. So any deficiency of these three B vitamins, folic acid or folate in its active form, B6 and B12, are going to contribute to an increased risk of heart disease. You know, there's other things that can increase homocysteine levels. Actually, an estrogen deficiency can increase homocysteine levels. People talk about dangers of estrogen supplementation, but I'm a believer that a little dab will do you, meaning that some women over 50 years old need a little teeny tiny bit of estrogen in order to feed their brain, feed their bones, and keep their homocysteine low. Smoking increases homocysteine level. Hostility and stress certainly increase homocysteine levels. And low thyroid hormones will also do it. You know, I keep seeing in my practice these marginal thyroid levels that the doctors are just flat out not